You are listening to Live In, September 27th, 2021. Well, what should we hop in?
Talk our happy, cheery talk for this week. What sort of gut-busting laughs do we have to start this week?
Well, I was listening to Michael Moore last night in a brief interview, and they were actually letting him talk until he brought up Cuba, and then suddenly they were running out of time and had to get on to something else to make room for the 18 hours a day about the Trump-Russia conspiracy. But one of the things that stood out to me was, and this is certainly not the first time that we've talked about this, but just the insane spending on the military. And one of the numbers that stood out was that over the course of the 20-year war in Afghanistan, which we lost, and I would invite you and the listener to verify these numbers, but I think that the defense contractors made something like $7 trillion over those 20 years. Meanwhile, today in 2021, as the pandemic drags on, we're having the Senate argue about whether or not older people should be able to get hearing aids.
Well, I mean, they're going to die soon anyway. Why should they be hearing?
Right. I mean, you can't hear when you're dead, right? So, of course, yeah. if you're at any age and someone drops a bomb on you, then you're also going to die.
Well, and you also, if it doesn't kill you, it'll probably blow your eardrums out. So,
right. And then even the hearing aid won't. So it would be a big government waste of spending to spend money on those hearing aids. And this brings up something that I heard on Friday. One of the propagandists at PBS was saying how he was critiquing the spending package, the $3.5 trillion infrastructure plan, which is basically everything that is involved in these packages, these rescue packages, is a matter of deferred maintenance, right? Basically 50 years of the government not doing its job. And some people are now thinking that it's all catching up to us. But this person was saying that America is an individualistic country. And so the kind of spending and the scope of this bill is too much. And this is, again, this is PBS. This is the educational liberal channel. This is not Fox News. And I just think of that term individualistic as at best a euphemism, but really would be more accurately described as just a lie. I mean, psychopathic, militaristic is certainly the more accurate way to describe what America is, especially in terms of its politics and the ideals that guide governance.
Well, I mean, what part of it did it seem like they were really emphasizing was going over the top? The social spending, I'm assuming the, helping out the corporations, infrastructure, which is also helping out corporations. They probably don't have much problem with that, right? But they want to have the mansion line or the Cinnabon line. It's just cost too much,
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, that was basically it. It cost too much, but it was also this argument out of principle that in America, we don't believe that it's the government's job to help people. This person said that, you know, we believe that benefits should be tied to work. And so if you're not working hard enough, if you're not making enough money, and if you don't have a place to live, if you're being evicted, if you can't get health care, what have you, that's not the government's job to help you on that regard. And among the many things that I just found to be completely sickening about this person's comments is I asked myself, what is this person, and for that matter, all of these people on PBS and MSNBC and CNN, what are they doing themselves that we would actually call work? Because sitting in a chair and talking really doesn't qualify as work. And if it does, it's about as cushy and void of effort and exertion as I can think of. So,
well, in this case, it's the general current of, quote, journalists in this country now, mainstream. Basically, they're serving the corporate, their corporate, not donors, but their corporate advertisers.
Sponsors.
Yeah, the sponsors. So, of course, the line there is going to be the right-wing business-friendly thing where we don't want to give money to these, and I don't even believe that they're talking of tying it with workers, right? I don't even think they want that either. You know, they want people to be, I mean, if they really did believe that, then, for instance, the worker-loving Biden administration would have extended the unemployment benefits.
Right.
But they don't even do that. But yeah, it's all unconsciously or consciously just pleasing the donor class and the advertising, the owners.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it isn't even the other thing that I really took issue with was who is any one person to say what we are as a country,
right?
With 330 million people, and we're supposed to, I mean, think about the irony. We're an individualistic country, and yet the subject of the sentence is we, as though all of us are basically the same person and we all believe exactly the same thing. You mean there isn't one person out of 330 million people who actually thinks, no, I definitely believe that if the government is going to exist and if it's going to be a legitimate organization, its job is to look out for the welfare of the people. And I think that's basically what the Constitution says. That's the point of having it. Then another thing that was quite aggravating was what this person is saying is that we're not an individualistic country. What this person is really talking about is the Reagan Revolution. I mean, all of these ideas that government shouldn't do anything to help or benefit the people, and that all of the money should go to the wealthy, and that the only part of spending that the government should make a priority is the spending on the military, and then the profiting off of that taxpayer money for the sake of the defense contractors. That is straight out of the Reagan Revolution. And so I think that has to be something that people keep in mind when we think about the situation here 41 years later in 2021. 40 years later, we still haven't had any kind of counter revolution to the Reagan revolution. We haven't made any kind of change, wholesale, significant change in our government and in our system from the Reagan revolution. And yet we look at the way our country operates as though the Reagan revolution never happened, right? That it's always been this way. And it's a normal thing for any country that is going to exist, that's going to endure over the centuries, that it regularly has revolutions and that they change. So we had the Reagan revolution in the 80s, and then of course we had the counterculture in the late 60s. We had the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Then you go back to the 1930s, and we had the New Deal, which was, you could say, is that that's definitely a political revolution. It changed the way that government operated. It changed the ideals that guided governance and the motivations for the system and the way it would invest its money and its goals and priorities. And the Reagan revolution is a counter revolution to the New Deal. And then before the New Deal, if you were to go back about 60 years, we have the Industrial Revolution, right? That also changed the way that the system operated and the way that the country operated, right? And what its goals were. Right, it was no longer going to be agrarian and self-sustaining. It was going to be about mass production, and using the power of the inventions of like the combustible engine and electricity and these sorts of things, and that was how the economy was going to work. And then before that, you had the Civil War. And then you had the early 19th century. And then before that, we had this thing called the American Revolution, where we weren't even a country. And we fought a war in order to gain independence from the British Empire. And then so now we get back to the year 2021, and we're just supposed to assume that America has always been this way, that we all believe exactly the same thing, and yet at the same time, we're this individualistic country where we don't really share any common ideas or goals, but everyone is just out for themselves, and that it's always been this way. And the comparison that was made during this program was to Norway. And this propagandist was saying, you know, Norway, they spend 46% of their revenue on taxes, right? I guess the better way to put it is 46% of their revenue is taxed. They're taxed for 46% of their revenue. So right away, Americans are brainwashed to think, well, I wouldn't want to live there because there's no way that economy will work. But if you look up this very basic information about Norway, it has one of the strongest economies in the world. But on top of that, its ideals are egalitarian, right? There's the narrowest margin between the CEOs and the poor in the country of Norway. It's a very safe country. Everybody has health care, which Democrats made it clear they didn't want in 2016 when they opted for Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. And another thing that, speaking of 2016, this I think is one of the most impressive things to think about with Norway is that for the entire year of 2016, the Norwegian police didn't fire a single gunshot. You think about how much violence there is in America and 2020 was the year of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. How many times police kill American citizens, mainly black, of course. And so we have a country that isn't violent, that is very safe, that has a very strong economy, but they pay 46% of their income in taxes. And of course, it isn't just the tax rate that matters, but it's the fact that the Norwegians practice subsidiarity, that they don't take this tax money and then spend it all on their military so that they can fight wars for 20 years and lose them. So I guess since I'm on a little bit of a roll, I'll just go on to the next thing that has driven me mad, which is this lie that Joe Biden keeps peddling that he gave at the United Nations, where he said, the first time in 20 years, we're no longer at war. And I think you may have gotten one of my topics, which is that troops from Fort Carson in Colorado, just south of Colorado Springs, 2,500 of them have been deployed to Iraq. And I think this is called Operation Internal Resolve. And if you want to double check that for me, if you can. But the colonel who's in charge of the group that's going over there says, you know, we're ready to fight and win. So I don't know about you, but that sounds like being at war. I mean, I don't know why else you deploy 2,500 troops to a foreign country, and you're talking about fighting and winning.
What are you talking about, David? We're protecting them. This is defense. We're protecting them. This isn't a war.
Yeah, it's Operation Inherent Resolve. We are ready to fight and win.
We're ready to fight. Yeah, and speaking of immense budgets. I didn't even hear about the main part of all this, but there was a kerfuffle on left-wing Twitter about AOC doing another one of her present votes. And this week it was she voted present on the $1 billion funding for Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. Which of course passed 420-9, but she didn't vote no. She voted present, and then she got a lot of shit about it from her constituents and progressive left wing folks. So she apologized about it. The vote was already done with, but she apologized about it and talked. Wrote this big long thing, which I didn't read, talking about how there was all this pressure from it, which I'm sure was true. But, you know, if she was really had some spine, she would have just voted no and whatever. So, right. So there you have this $1 billion of funding to Israel that doesn't need a dime and shouldn't get a dime of any money from the United States. Learn how to pull up their own bootstraps and not be, welfare recipients from the United States. But,
military welfare, that should be a term that Oblivion copyrights. But that's an excellent point, because and domestically in America, and to go back to the PBS propagandists, it's always about pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Like, you have a government, but the government doesn't have a job. Like, it just exists, right? It's this self-serving, worthless institution. The only reason to have a government is that it does things for the people. It takes care of these basic things that all people need, like having roads, having health care, controlling disease, right? We'll have to get to COVID here in a little bit, but I think there's too much important points to get into on these current topics. But we never hear this same principle applied to this just totally gluttonous spending. I mean, this is an insane amount of money. That defense contractors made $7 trillion to lose a war. And that's not $7 trillion made in the free market. This is $7 trillion made through government spending. And it's just not hard to understand. And I think everybody knows what's going on. I mean, they may not know.
Well, but then again, I mean, I wouldn't have known that they voted on the annual defense bill unless I'd been hearing it in regard to this billion dollar Iron Dome extra, of which the House on Thursday approved by 316 to 113 votes, so it wasn't quite so unanimous, $740 billion annual defense bill that would add about $24 billion more to the Pentagon's budget than Mr. Biden requested. Wow. Oh, how about that? So did you hear much about this vote? I mean, does that even come up? Man, yeah.
No, I didn't hear that yeah. much about it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not quite, you were saying that people know about this. I think they're kind of, it's not even brought up before the public as an issue because A, they're not supposed to have any input on that, nor do they have any way to have real input on these budgetary matters. I think there'd be a lot more in trouble if people really saw how the defense budget is laid out and what the spending means do we really need this, that, and the other thing. If that was put forward in a real democratic way in front of the people, I think this budget would be cut real quick. And, you know, I also think that they would, if given the option of, are we going to spend $1 trillion over the lifetime of the program for this Batman plane that doesn't really work very well, if at all. Should we use it for that, or should we use it for the welfare of the people? I think people might say, well, yeah, let's put the $1 trillion into anything else, really. But that's never comes up or never will in the current formulation of our society.
Right, but it just goes to show you that when we hear about this gridlock in Congress or how divided we are and how hard it is to get people to organize, this really is not true. When it comes to military spending, there's absolutely no difficulty in getting people to be organized.
Giving stuff to the billionaires, giving the welfare to the billionaires.
Right.
There's consensus on that. There might be a few votes.
Right.
I mean, I was kind of surprised there was any votes against the defense budget. But, and you also always have to understand that there's some of these, quote, conservatives that are, they kind of put a protest vote up in libertarian terms, which I agree with the libertarian rights anti-war stance, even though it usually has no moral backing to it, which is, we shouldn't be spending money on this government. It's basically the government shouldn't spend any money. It's kind of their thing. So I agree with them. They shouldn't spend on that, but, it lacks the moral.
But it isn't because we shouldn't be killing people. It's just they don't believe the government is spending money.
Right.
Before I forget, I just want to make one quick point. When the Obamacon took over in 2009, he campaigned on the idea that the Iraq War was a mistake, that it was wrong, that he didn't vote for it. But of course, Hillary Clinton did. And of course, this was back when how you voted on the Iraq war actually seemed to matter. But, you know, 8 years later, when it was Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, it didn't matter if you voted for the Iraq war. It meant that you were a great, strong woman and ready to be a leader. And you could only be against Hillary Clinton if you were a misogynist and you hate all women. It was the only reason that you could have not liked Hillary Clinton as a candidate for president. But what the Obamacon did was, while he did, as I recall, reduce the number of troops in Iraq, and he made the Iraq war less of a priority, he then escalated the war in Afghanistan, and at one point had 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. So if you think about that and you look at what's happening now with the Obamacon's vice president, Top Gun Joe Biden, now the president, he's doing the inverse of the same thing. He's bragging about how we got out of Afghanistan after 20 years, but now he's going to escalate things in Iraq. And of course, the militaristic propaganda machine isn't going to pay any attention to that. I read about this deployment to Iraq because, as you know, I used to live in Colorado, so I get this newsletter called Out There Colorado that I get over the internet about once a week. And it does have some interesting things that I like to read about. But that was the first time that I read about it, was Fort Carson troops deploying to Iraq. Mm-hmm. And then the second time that I heard about it was last night with Michael Moore talking on MSNBC.
He mentioned it.
Yes. Michael Moore brought this up. He said, you know, where are we really no longer at war? And Moore pointed out, well, and another thing that Moore said, we're sending troops to Iraq. And then another thing I'll give Moore credit for is that he brought up that we still have these other wars going on in Somalia, in Syria, in Yemen, and no one wants to talk about these wars either. And of course, those wars were all started by the Obamacon and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, right? Because it went from only the two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, that wasn't enough, to the Somalia, Yemen, and in Syria.
Libya.
And in a way, you can see, go ahead, what's that?
Libya.
Libya, yes. Omitted that so many of them, it can be difficult to keep up with.
Yeah. And there's others, but who's counting?
But you can see the Obamacon's presidency is really the fruition of the Reagan Revolution, where what is happening in the previous decades that really shows you why things are currently happening in the decade that you're talking about. So if you want to look at the Obamacon's presidency from 2009 to 2017, where you have all these wars going on, well, that's the consequence of basically 30 years of this massive military buildup. And I mean, the only reason that you would build up your military to such an extreme degree is you're going to use it. Let's see. And then there was, there was another point that I was going to make. Oh, yes, with this kind of transitions to the COVID-19 pandemic, but it stays on point with the propaganda, which is that we're now getting a lot of commentary about how the countries that have actually been able to get the 70 to 80% vaccination rates to finally make it so that COVID-19 is no longer a public health threat, it's these excuses being made that, well, they're able to do these things because there are these undesirable, characteristics or systems that these other countries have that America does not. And I can recall one piece that I read last night. The countries that have reached 80% vaccination rate, so that COVID-19 is no longer a public health threat. You have, for example, there's a Qatar and Singapore, and these are small authoritarian countries. Then you have a place like Belgium that has a highly centralized healthcare system. And then you have places like Denmark and Finland, where they have a high level of trust in the government. Okay. So, and we're supposed to be proud of being American because we're not any of those things. We don't trust the government. We don't have a highly centralized healthcare system, and we're not a small authoritarian country. So one of the points I want to make right away is that these are all false arguments about why these countries were able to get everybody vaccinated and make it so that COVID-19 is no longer a public health threat. The reason that all of these countries have been able to eliminate COVID-19 as a public health threat is science. They have followed best practices, and it has nothing to do with the size of the country, the form of the government, or this myth, which is another one of my topics, of trusting the government, or in America, there's a lack of trust in the government, which we're supposed to take as a good thing. We're a free country because we don't trust the government. And for me, there's a clear connection back to the issues that we were just talking about in terms of military spending, which is we do trust the government. And let me give you an example. In fact, we trust the government to the point of being gullible. And let me give you an example that I think that you'll agree with me on. Let's go back and say that it's September of 2001, right? And the 9/11 has just happened. And you're having a conversation with some people about the attacks, right? Are you following me on this?
Yeah.
And you say, well, I'm not so sure that I really buy the official explanation that we're given, that our government didn't know this was going to happen, and that these 18 people just on their own were able to get into the country, hijack these planes, and fly them into the World Trade Center, and we didn't know about it. I mean, I think that our government knew that this was going to happen, and they let it happen so that everybody would get fired up to go to war. Now, if you said that back in late September of 2001, how would the people you were talking to have reacted?
I think very early on, they might have been more open to it before it got drilled into their head that no, it was, you know, this, that, and the other. I think at first it was so shocking and weird that, you know, a lot of people were questioning the situation. But yeah, pretty quickly the militant thing got in line, and it was, of course, repeated over and over. If you're not with us, you're a terrorist. You know, you're with
right.
The terrorists. And once the atmosphere got into place, it was total authoritarian boot. You know,
right, but that can jackbooting. If you have blind trust in the government, I mean, why would you depart from what your own instinct was in your reaction to something that was shocking and weird, as you put it, and then say, well, okay, yeah, it was Al-Qaeda, it was Osama bin Laden, and they did this, and we didn't know anything about it, there wasn't anything we could have done to stop it, and now we have to go to war. Because you trust the government. So it's not a matter of trust. It's a matter of the behavior that is encouraged. right? And in America, if you're a belligerent, militaristic society, and you're encouraged to lash out and kill and blow up and destroy, you're highly motivated to do that, right? But if there's a pandemic and the behavior that needs to be put into place is to be calm and still and not be mobile and be in large crowds, if the behavior that is encouraged is compassion, right? Like, think about the older people, the people that are highly vulnerable, that if they get this, they're almost certainly going to die, and you don't want to spread it. If the behavior that is encouraged, that you actually need to pay attention to this crisis, right, and stop being absorbed in your compartmentalized, egomaniacal world, where you don't want to think about anything other than what is your own personal career and your own personal interests. Oh, well, I don't really follow public events like pandemics. If that's the behavior that's encouraged, people aren't interested. But it doesn't have anything to do with lack of trust in government. And so I would like to give another example that I think that you'll understand. Let's talk about February of 2003, when these hearings are going on and Colin Powell is sitting there talking about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now, was there any pushback against the idea that Iraq had these weapons of mass destruction and that America should go to war in Iraq, that already being at war in Afghanistan, America should now start a second war against a country that in no way was tied to the attacks of 9/11 and that in no other way attacked us? Was there any pushback?
Right. Well, I mean, there was some, but obviously not enough. Yeah, there was quite extensive people out in the streets. I mean, millions around the world, and this,
around
that, and the other
thing. There were.
Well, there were a lot in the United States too. I mean, you see New York, there were huge protests and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, who had control in that situation? It wasn't the people didn't have a vote to veto it. Anyway, on top of,
I mean, I could say the same thing about the pandemic. I mean, are there people in the United States who have taken the pandemic seriously from the beginning? Yes. I mean, are there people who think that you should get vaccinated? Have any Americans gotten vaccinated? Yes. But you've got to look at the big picture. My point is that there was complete trust in the government when the government said we have to start a war in Afghanistan. There was complete trust in the government when the government said we have to start a war in Iraq. And in both cases, the official reasons given for starting these wars were accepted. There was no questioning. There was no pushback. There was no resistance.
I don't know about no resistance, but anyway.
I mean, there was, yeah. but not any resistance that amounted to anything.
Yeah, but quickly before we go on to talking about COVID directly, there's actually a transition to that has partially COVID with it, which is and was the big meme last week of the horse whipping the Haitians,
right?
Meme. And behind all this, the people aren't really paying attention to, and I'm assuming that the mainstream media is pushing this side of the thing, is how hardcore and sadistic Biden is compared to even Trump as far as immigration is concerned. I mean, it's not just the horse whipping. This Title 42, which is actually an exemption that makes it where you can, because of the coronavirus pandemic, you can turn away people at the border just willy-nilly. You can just say that it's public health and they're being turned over. So what has Biden done? Well, this was started under the Trump era.
Right.
But Biden has just gone nuts with it. He has turned away 680,000 people so far in his administration. And Trump, during his entire time that he used this rule, was 400,000, I think. So just on that, and it's kind of an odd thing. They're using the coronavirus pandemic fears to turn away people, which is kind of sick in itself. On top of the, just all the other thing, even though you see in the Empire Rag New York Times where they talk about Biden wanting to turn around the Trump administration's thing, but he's just having a hard time doing it, you know. And it's just the extreme opposite of the case. He is just sadistic, and you know, it's just no accident that the unfortunately they had this bad situation where they had the cavalry out there and running down the Haitians.
They weren't whipping the Haitians. The whips were just there for the horses.
Well, yeah, but
and it's just like, so what was this, the Kentucky Derby? I mean, why do you need to whip a horse when these people are just standing around? I mean, was there a race, like the Haitians they're black, right? So we would assume that they're really, really, really fast, you know, like track stars and basketball players and all that. So are they going to run away from the border patrol people?
So
that your horse will run as fast as you can, because the only time I've ever seen the need for a whip with a horse is when you're running a horse race and you're trying to make the horse run as fast as it can.
I'm just watching a video and he was using the whip. He was whipping towards the guy. I can see it, you know. So it's right. Not even
the
true that he wasn't using.
Is look at the face of the patrol agent. I mean, is the patrol agent looking? Where is the patrol agent looking? They're looking right at the person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's got a whip in my hand.
Right, yeah, yeah.
At the person.
It was clear he was using it for that. So I mean, yeah, it's just bullshit. The video, it's obvious what. I mean, they were just there at this road that crosses the road, and there were these Haitians, which, by the way, the reason that they were desperately trying to get across is they've been, like, stuck under this bridge, 2,000 of them, in, you know, the heat of the summer.
Right.
They're, like, desperate to get out of this situation, so there they cross them there, and then they're met with the cavalry, you know, and they're, like, trying to herd them back over. And the very next day, they just deported all of them, so whatever.
They did allow some of them in the country conditionally, so that they have to be processed.
Right.
But the only reason that happened was there was finally some media coverage. I mean, it finally got in the news that people saw these camps and these tents. And it's just like, what is going on? Like, why would you allow people to be living in those kind of conditions and not do anything to help them? The other thing is, we have to remember that there was a big earthquake in Haiti, right? That caused a lot of people to be displaced. And also there was, I think, basically a coup where the president of Haiti was assassinated. And so there really isn't a government in place in Haiti. And there are gangs that are the country is mainly controlled by gangs, as I understand it. And so that is a totally legitimate reason to leave your country and then to be seeking asylum elsewhere. But I think you're absolutely right. It's just another example of how there really is no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. And there really isn't any difference between President Joe Biden and President Donald Trump. And I guess as a way to transition into a focus on the COVID pandemic, when I think about the numbers of people who have died, you basically see it's pretty much the same, that there were right about 400,000 deaths under Trump from March 2020 through January of 2021. And that covers a period of 10 months. And now we are approaching the month of October. And so this is 9 full months in under President Biden, and we're at about 700,000 deaths, if I'm not mistaken. We're closing in on 700,000 deaths. And so that's 300,000. So I guess we're supposed to celebrate the fact that the great Joe Biden, there's been 100,000 fewer deaths than under Trump. But of course, Trump was the one who happened to be in the White House when all of this started, right? So if no one had time to prepare or know what was happening. And Biden, unlike Trump, came into office with the benefit of the vaccine, right? What do you have in terms of numbers or other pertinent information about the pandemic?
Well, it looks like it's going down. It has been steadily going down. It basically looks like the peak was right around Labor Day. And so it's been going down ever since. So at least 2, maybe 3 weeks of gradually going down. The hospitalizations have been going down. Deaths are about ready to go down, but they're still pretty high, 2,000 a day for deaths. And as far as Kentucky is concerned, Kentucky has been going down now. Let me see. It looks like its peak is pretty similar. At the peak is the highest ever, higher than the winter peaks. But it looks like it's going down. It's down 12% 2 weeks for cases. Not a huge amount. And let's see. And so what's going up? It's moving.
Well, the information that stands out to me is that we've got Alaska and Idaho now in crisis standards of care.
Yeah, Alaska's number one. It's up 62% in the last two. It's 143 per 100,000. The second place is Wyoming, up 14%, 96 per 100,000. Those two. Idaho's getting it's down below Kentucky and North Dakota. But it's up. So, yeah.
You have these states that have been at crisis standards of care, and their number of infections may be going down, but then you have Kentucky and Tennessee and Alabama and Texas that are in Georgia that are now basically on the brink of crisis standards of care, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Seems to me like what's happening is that nothing is really getting better, that you just have these places where the numbers start to go down because basically they can't go any higher up. But as soon as that happens, because it's a pandemic and it really isn't confined to any one place, the numbers start to approach such a level that crisis standards of care are about to go in effect in these other states.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think that once we go back to standard time, it starts getting dark earlier and it starts to get, it's going to start getting cold, especially up north in the Northeast and in the Midwest, that what's been happening in the South is going to start happening in the northern parts of the country. But that prediction runs contrary to the prediction that I read this past week, that there's going to be a sharp decrease in cases between now and March. I don't know if you've read anything to that effect or if you have any thoughts.
Well, I don't see how, you know, unless, and then what's the point of having vaccines? If people have been vaccinated, there's already a substantial, you know, a majority of people are fully vaccinated in the United States, and a good portion have gotten it. Surely at some point we're going to get it to where it's going to be hard for it to spread. Which I think already happened with the alpha, you know, after the peak in
over Christmas,
Christmas, you know, it ran through, there just weren't enough people. It wasn't contagious enough and there just weren't enough people, that were either had immunity, natural immunity, or vaccine immunity, that it was going down. Now then the Delta came, much more contagious, and got in, you know, started Missouri there, Ozarks. I mean, it was just so clear where the vaccinations were the lowest. That's where it really got going, and then it spread on out. So the big question now is, if this goes, it goes back down in the same kind of fashion, runs through the populace, by next, you know, say if the next thing is going to be winter, when there's potential for it to come back, will there be enough people left that don't have immunity for it to really spike up and spread? That's the big question. Now, I would think unless we have another variant that's even more crazy than Delta, it should start going down. If not, then if there's some kind of version that's able to get around these vaccines, then you might as well just throw in the towel. It's going to be permanent because, you know, this is just going to be a way of life. I'm hoping, and I think it's quite possible that this prediction that it'll just keep going down is true.
Well, I mean, I hope that is true as well. And the Moderna CEO and the CEO of Pfizer have both said that they think that within a year that the pandemic will be over.
1 year from now, year from now, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's still a long time,
yeah.
Especially when you're already 18 months into it. But another factor that can't be overlooked is we have to think about the rest of the world, not just the United States. And the rest of the world isn't vaccinated because, of course, the United States and the G7 countries, the wealthy nations of the world, don't want to share the vaccine. They don't want to share the mRNA technology so that people can manufacture their own vaccine, nor do they want to invoke a War Powers Act or whatever other kind of procedure that would significantly expedite manufacture of the vaccine so that we could be going around the world and getting people vaccinated. But I think I've said in a previous podcast that if the official number for infections in the United States is around 40 million, you could go ahead and basically triple that to 120 million, and that would account for the infections that were never reported because they were asymptomatic, and also the fact that you can't realistically expect perfectly accurate record keeping when you have such chaos in a crisis, right? So go ahead and say 120 million have been vaccinated. There's 330 million people in the country. So, I mean, that still leaves you with over 200 million people that haven't been infected. And then if you say, which I think it's 55.3% that are fully vaccinated, that's nowhere close to the amount that need to be vaccinated to basically shut down the Delta variant. You really need around 90% to be vaccinated. But I mean, 55%, if it's 200 million that don't have any natural immunity, and then that's going to leave, I mean, 100 million would be 50% unvaccinated. It's slightly lower than that. Say it's 45%. So just say it's another 80 million, right? And I think another number I've heard is it's 71 million that don't have any immunity either through vaccination or through infection. I mean, so 70 million people are still going to have to get infected. And if it took 18 months for anywhere between 80 million to 120 million to get infected, it's going to take anywhere between another year and another 18 months for these other 70 million to 80 million people to get sick, which also means you're going to have another 700,000 people at a minimum die. I mean, it's pretty basic math. I mean, you've got to look at the population and account for best accurate estimates you can come up with, the combination of natural immunity through prior infection and people who have been vaccinated. So, I mean, it's still a long way to go. And then I know that we're running out of time, but in terms of the issue of the vaccine mandate, this is just also worthless. I mean, you want to talk about another pathetic effort by Joe Biden to be a leader. This idea that if you have over 100 employees, everybody's got to get vaccinated. But for some reason, it makes sense that if you only have 99 employees or fewer, they don't need to be vaccinated. So, I mean, that's a useless effort. And then we have the courts that are at least temporarily blocking vaccine mandates for teachers and healthcare workers in New York City. I did read, though, that I think a circuit judge named Bunning in the Cincinnati area said that he was going to uphold vaccine mandate. And he said that people who claim that their civil liberties mean that they don't have to get vaccinated can exercise another one of their civil liberties, which is that they are free to look for another job. Right. So if you have a job and your employer mandates that you get vaccinated and you want to talk about your civil liberties, then another one of your civil liberties is that you're free to say, well, I don't want to keep this job. I want to look for another job. But the problem is that there isn't, and there definitely isn't going to be a consensus or across the board upholding a vaccine mandate. So it's very hard for me to see that this is going to get better anytime soon. And I would just add that the Moderna CEO, who's saying that the pandemic is going to be over in a year, was saying the same thing last year. He said that by this time it would be over. So, And Fauci said the same thing. Fauci said he thought that by July of 2021, that this would be over with. And of course, July 2021 was right about the time that the Delta variant started to go crazy. And I mean, this has all been so bad and relentless that I think it's foolish at this point to think that it's going to go away. I mean, I think that we're going to have a cure where, I mean, if you get this, you can take a pill and it means you're not going to get severely ill and die. Or we're just going to have to hope that eventually there's going to be a mutation that makes the virus benign, basically. Because if the virus becomes too virulent, the virus itself can't survive, right? Because it infects people and it kills them. And so it can't spread, you know? So the virus has to be able to keep its host alive in order for the virus itself to stay alive. But I am nonetheless encouraged by and hopeful, as you put it, that these models that say there's going to be a sharp decrease in infections between now and March, maybe you're right, that you would start to think, like, how long can this go on? How many people can get sick? How many people can die? Plus the people getting vaccinated, that at some point the virus is going to run out of places to go. But again, by my estimates, it's going to take at least another year for enough people to get infected on top of the people getting vaccinated for this to be over. And I guess in terms of making it one more prediction, I'm going to say that currently, with it being 55.3% of the American population fully vaccinated, I bet you that in the United States that it never gets to 60% vaccinated. We will never reach that level.
I don't know about that. I mean, it's been holding steady as far as the number of people getting it. It's about, you know, 500,000-600,000 a day for, you know, last month or two. So unless that changes radically.
Well, that's something we should keep track of. Like, so let's write this down, 55.3 vaccinated, and then week to week, we should look at the percent vaccinated. And if we see it steadily continue to go up, but I just think then that'll be another encouraging sign. But I just think that America is so anti-science. You know, that's the problem. It's not that we don't trust the government. We totally trust our government when it comes to fighting wars and spending on the military. There's no way that we could fight all these wars and spend like crazy on the military if we didn't have not only trust, but just blind trust. Like, there's no questioning of the military, its motives, military spending. I mean, you're not going to get anywhere arguing against military spending. Everybody believes in it. It's
That's why we need the troops to be marching in there with their injector bots at the lead, right. And then everybody will be into it, right?
Yeah, if we said instead of a mandatory vaccine that this is a military operation, where the drones that kill civilians and children instead are going to be shooting the vaccine darts into everybody, then suddenly everyone would accept it.
All right, man.
So, for David Vernon Miller, this is Dr. David Overby. You've been listening to the Oblivion Podcast.